Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Hello everybody and welcome once again to The View from the Lane, the multi-award winning Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. Joining me, your host Danny Kelly, is just The Athletic's James Moore. No, that's not an April Fool's joke. Others too important to be working on a bank holiday. So it's just me and you, James. Hello to you. And on today's episode, we've got a lot to get through. A comeback win against Luton. We'll talk about some of the players who did well, some of them who didn't do quite so well. The scouting changes, more changes among the administrative and scouting staff at Spurs. And we'll talk about the quick turnaround and a trip to West Ham on Tuesday night. I think statues may well come up as well. So let's crack on with this, actually. Me and you, James. It's great, actually, because we won't be being put down.
No, exactly.
And being told we're wrong.
Wild hot takes all over the place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So a win. A late win, a fourth home victory that Tottenham had to come from behind, etc. They do put us through the ringer, I suppose to say. Let me just give you the Opta stat. And it is fantastically positive in one way. Spurs have now earned 22 points from losing possessions in the Premier League this season. And the only other team, you know, they're really good at it as well, is Liverpool, who now, after yesterday's game, have got 26 points from losing possessions. While only in 2010-11, when we got 24, 2012-13, we've got 23, they accumulated more points in a single campaign in this competition. Let's be honest, when people talk about Spurs' character, that dreaded word Spursy, having to come from behind or coming from behind or being involved in games where the lead changes hands several times, I would say they're all part of that syndrome. So I shouldn't be too surprised. You were there, you were in the stadium, James, among the great throng of Spurs fans. What did you make of the game?
I have to say, despite there being kind of some underlying frustrations in the crowd, I think mostly about the referee just completely disregarding the concept of time-wasting for the entire game, really. There wasn't really a point that I didn't think Spurs would win. And that is, I guess, kind of conditioning born out of those stats you've just read out there. The fact that they've done this so many times against so many teams.
Yeah.
And some better teams than Luton, let's be frank.
Yeah.
I didn't really get a great sense of there being real kind of peril or kind of, you know, fear in the crowd. It did just kind of feel like almost kind of inevitable, which is like a dangerous mindset, I guess, in a way, because that is where complacency
definitely
comes from. But we can be complacent. That's fine, right? You and me.
Yeah, we're not on the pitch.
Exactly, yeah. It's very, very minimal impact on the game.
Oh, our absolute complacency and certainty that Spurs will come back to win, which I didn't have, it's no problem at all, as long as the lads on the pitch in the white shirts don't share it.
Yeah, I mean, so there were one or two tactical things, and I'm sure we'll come on to the lineup and Postecoglou's selections in a minute. But there were one or two things that weren't quite right. But beyond that, I did actually think the performance was reasonably good throughout, even in the first half where we've kind of become accustomed to one, Spurs not scoring, and two, actually generally Spurs playing quite badly. I think they played quite well. And obviously they were unlucky not to score in that passage of play where Son hit both posts and then Werner and Saar both had shots kind of cleared off the line.
That's the moment where one's complacency about the eventual triumph gets tested a little bit.
Well, yeah, true.
Because there is the other thing, the one of those days syndrome, isn't there?
That was the most one of those days moments I think I've seen in quite a long time. But I think generally they played well. You know, when you're losing a game against Luton, with respect, for what would it have been, 50 minutes or whatever, that doesn't feel great in the moment. But I don't really ever feel like the game is getting away from Spurs. And you know what it's like now in modern Premier League football? I know they scored the winner in 86 minutes, but in reality...
It's still 15 minutes to go, yeah.
Yeah, there was still 15 minutes to play at that point. So it wasn't like the game was entirely slipping through their fingers even then. So, you know, it wasn't incredible. I mean, not going to be kind of crying about it, but I really didn't think it was bad. And if you look at Luton's results over the course of the season, how many times have they been shellacked?
None.
Right at the start of the season, I think, at Brighton and then Chelsea, the first two games.
Three games, and then they lose only by a single goal. It's almost...
They lost 4-1 at Anfield, but beyond that, I think they've basically been in every single game they've played all season. Now, this isn't Derby County of 2007-2008.
No.
They're a good competitive team in Premier League football.
We're not a Luton Town podcast, but on other platforms where people allow me to drone on, given the resources, they're one of our teams of the season, Luton. They're a fantastically spirited team. They know what they're doing. They know what their strengths are. They play to their strengths. And then that includes time wasting, you know, so much the better for them. They were really good, and they made it difficult for Spurs. Listen, there are positives, of course. I wish we wouldn't keep going behind at home. It doesn't make for an old geezer like me doesn't do much for my heart. But I suppose coming back shows that they have heart.
I suppose the thing you would say about that is the negative of constantly coming from behind all the time is the game is always live for 90 or whatever it was, 97 minutes on Saturday. Yeah. Whereas if you're turning up at half time, you're relatively comfortable in the second half. You can kind of control the game and play at your own pace. And then you've got West Ham on Tuesday night and you're in a slightly fresher physical state for the second game of the week. That would be, the kind of potential knock-on issue that you would get in a normal season where there'd be a lot of midweek games. That's been less of a factor this season.
The concept of killing a game, it doesn't appear to have crossed Spurs' mind. They're like Baron Frankenstein. They like to keep everything alive, electric shocks to keep the game alive. Let me say, we can talk about the selection in a second, but I want to talk about Postecoglou and what he did when Spurs needed to change something. By making the change very early at half-time, I think he gave himself the best chance to win. Personally speaking, watching the game on a large television, I thought that was the right decision to make, that Kulusevski had to come off, much as I love him. And that Werner, who I thought was doing fine down the left-hand side, everything is clouded by that chance that he missed, and it's almost trademark Werner miss, isn't it? I think Postecoglou, the players he substituted, the first two, I think, were certainly Kulusevski and then Bissouma. I think he wanted to take those off after 3 minutes. The goal, I mean, we've talked about some positives, we'll come back to the positives of the comeback. The goal must have driven, it drove me mad, so I presume it's driven him mad, because he's not a fool, is he? Kulusevski gets the ball, does his thing that cuts inside, and then, if you think about it, passes the ball behind three Spurs players. So now you are exposed with one third of your outfield players already out of the game.
Yeah.
Now, that is the standard Premier League way of scoring goals these days. Look at Spurs' winner, where the ball breaks from a set piece. You haven't broken their lines by some magical piece of play. The ball has bounced into a place where you've got a chance to break and Spurs go on and score. So first there was the Kulusevski pass, which was poor, to use the cliche, sloppy, whatever you want to call it. Then, and I'm really going to put on my tin hat on now, the ball breaks to Son. He's involved in a tussle for it. He's far too weak.
Yeah.
He's just blown over like an ice lolly wrapper in the street.
Poetic.
In a gale. Well, that's why I'm paid the big bucks. I've got a big microphone. Actually, I'm just furious about it. His run back towards the goal does not end with him marking anybody on the edge of the box. Then Bissouma, who has taken up the position where a doggy would normally be, quite rightly. I mean, Andros Townsend is, you know, He hasn't got his bus pass yet, but it's not in the first flush of youth, is he?
I mean,
he breezes past him.
That step over, by the way, I reckon I may have seen that step over. If it's not at least 800 times, I'd be amazed. This is it's the thing that he does all the time. That step over onto his right foot, taking it outside.
Yeah.
And exactly what he did. I mean, look, we cannot expect Yves Bissouma to have watched as much as Spurs in the mid-2010s as you or I, Danny. That's absolutely fine. But I think as a Premier League footballer, he should be at least aware of the player he's playing against and the likelihood of him going outside or inside in those circumstances.
So then because of the step over, he's then slightly on the back foot as they head towards the penalty, but he gets back to challenge him again, but never gets close enough to do anything about, and, you know, then Son isn't in position, Dragosin has to come, and all the rest of it. But I would have been furious as manager with Son less so. He's got a lot of credit at the bank. Kulusevski's pass and Bissouma's attempt to defend it, I wasn't wondering whether he was tempted to get them off the pitch after 3 minutes. It looked dreadful to me.
I mean, that aside with Kulusevski, there was, to go to one of the two tactical tweaks, or one of the two tactical selections that I wasn't entirely convinced by.
Mm.
I mean, you talk about the number of goals that are scored in the Premier League, or the Spurs have conceded from kind of low crosses from more or less the byline into the penalty area. But Spurs obviously scored a lot of goals like that as well.
Yeah.
And that, we'd have to say, isn't really a kind of assist that Kulusevski is ever going to get. He's very rarely going to go round the outside of the fullback and drag the ball across like the 6 yard box.
He did it for Sweden during the international break.
Really?
I made a point. Absolutely. He made a header for Gustav Nielsen.
Of course.
By going to the byline, pulling it back because he had Isak and Nielsen to aim for. And I remember I wrote it down. Come on, guy, you can do this.
But against a team who play with wing-backs. And we should say, when we were talking about how Luton played, by the way, they didn't sit like eight players behind the ball. They did leave spaces, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Arti Doughty, as you know. People saw my tweet on Saturday. I've been following his career for a long, long time.
It's fantastic you saw him at Kingstonian. James, in the last 2 weeks, I've been virtually turned off on Talk Sport for saying that he should be in the England squad.
I don't think that's that ludicrous.
They're so struggling at left-back. Statistically, he's getting more crosses in than any left-footed defender in the country.
Well, that is true. His distribution, his delivery into the penalty area is absolutely fantastic, but his defending is not great.
Sure. Hello, I'm an England defender. You know, that's how it works now.
And he's playing at left wing-back. He is going to leave space in behind, and it's the same on the other side. Like, if you have Werner and Johnson exploiting that space in behind the wing backs, you're going to be able to drag loads of balls across the penalty area and you're going to get lots of chances. And sure enough, both of the goals that Spurs scored in the second half came from balls across the penalty area from very high up the pitch, more or less on the byline, where, you know, one is an own goal scored by dint of the pressure on the defender, and the second is, I think, a really, really good little knockback from Johnson to Son. And again, a deflection, but those are the circumstances. Those are the situations you create. That's the luck you earn when you put balls into that kind of area.
Yeah, it's a quirk of the way these things are done, isn't it? That Johnson doesn't get an assist for the own goal. It doesn't go into his stats.
That is funny. Do you get an assist if you win a penalty? Maybe that's just fantasy Premier League.
I think that's fantasy Premier League.
Maybe. But yeah, it does seem strange that his contribution to that, it hasn't changed at all. Like, he played a ball across the 6 yard box.
Which, if the guy hadn't touched it, Werner surely would have scored even for a yard out. He would have surely touched that in,
maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah, maybe.
So we'll come back to Kulusevski and Johnson. What was the other tactical change tactical selection you weren't so sure about?
I got a bit of flack for this on Twitter, actually.
You're used to that. That ain't a problem for you.
That is true. I've had worse. Dragosin at left-sided centre-back, a right-footer who doesn't seem to be able to pass brilliantly with his left foot. That's not really a criticism of him as a player, but the way they try and play out from the back, particularly given the movement of the left-back into midfield, quite often like directly in front of him, he looked so uncomfortable trying to play the ball out. Like, Romero would play the ball to him, or Vicario would play the ball to him. And he'd kind of shift his body around and then realise he couldn't play the pass he needed to play, and then turn back and play it back to Vicario or Romero, and the ball just kept coming
back. In the end,
back.
He decided the better part of valour there was to just run the ball out himself. He did it very effectively, but he didn't pass the ball. He decided to run with
it. This was not a criticism of his performance in the game. Like, I don't think he did anything wrong. I don't think he made a mistake or whatever. There were several moments when Spurs had the ball at the back. It was mainly in the first half. They had the ball at the back and they were obviously trying to build the ball through the midfield, play the ball through the pitch like they always do. But he just wasn't really capable of playing the kind of passes he needed to play, just purely on the basis of being right-footed. And there were two, you know, there were two left-footed centre-backs on the bench, yeah. if you call Ben Davies a centre-back.
I think you can this season call him a centre-back. As long as you weren't suggesting that they swap him and Romero.
I did see people suggest that, by the way, that Romero would be more comfortable on the other side.
So then you've got two players out of
position. I don't have a view on that. I'd be interested
to
see.
You don't...
No, Dragosin would be in position.
Well, he's supposed to be a left-sided centre-back, I think, isn't he?
I thought it was a right back.
He can play right back as well, yeah. No, the point I'm making is, even if they played me at left centre-back, you don't swap me and Romero. You slightly weaken the Romero's position as well, then you don't do that. They got to half time, as you say. Luton had done well. Spurs, they probably needed to make the change. First of all, let's talk about the change that he made at half time at Ange Postecoglou. The temptation always is to take off Werner, isn't it? Because he's not the regular, the club doesn't own him and all the rest of it. But I thought he'd done excellently, not world beatingly. But I thought he was causing his pace, was causing them plenty of trouble. Whereas Dejan's his stuff that he does wasn't causing them any trouble.
Yeah, I think that felt like a fairly obvious, I mean, not kind of undermining the manager making light of his decision, but it felt like a fairly obvious one to me that Johnson's pacing behind. And as I said, the ability to exploit that pace behind the wing back and drag those balls across the penalty area. That kind of felt like a really obvious decision to me and a right one. And I can see why. Look, Kulusevski, despite my infamous WhatsApp message of early 2022, is not a bum.
No.
He's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
And I can see why you wouldn't start Johnson in the circumstances, given he played, admittedly, only an hour, bafflingly, of that Wales game on, was that Tuesday, Wednesday
that
night?
That was one of the extraordinary substitutions. The biggest threat your team has in a game you must win, you take him off the pitch.
And leave a championship centre-forward on for 2 hours. Anyway, this isn't a Wales podcast. That felt like an obvious and correct decision to me. Like I said, I can see why he started Kulusevski over Johnson, but it was the right choice. And I think, to be honest, we've been maybe not quite critical, but we have questioned Postecoglou's substitutions and how early he makes them. And I mean, you know, you're mentioning 3 minutes there. I don't think he was probably realistically tempted to do that. But
maybe that was just me projecting my own feelings. Yeah.
Look, let's go back to Fulham before the international break, where they played really badly in the first half and were 1-0 down, and he didn't make any changes at half time, and then the game was completely gone by the time he did. I'm not suggesting it was hugely likely that Luton were going to go 2-0, 3-0 up. But
Vicario made two decent Vicario saves, didn't he? So there was always...
It was a good block from Porro as well.
There was a possible chance of a second goal, which would have been calamitous. But he made the change nice and early, and it worked well. It left the question... And we did see the midfield get changed a lot late on. Not all three of them, like against Fulham, was it? Were they changed all three? So something's not quite working in that Spurs midfield at the moment as well. Is that fair to say? Is it just that Maddison just hasn't got back to his pre-injury brilliance?
Well, I think it's a combination of several players not quite being back at their pre-injury, pre-illness, pre-suspension, pre-malaria. Yeah. You know, because Basuma's probably the one who's had the bigger drop-off of the three of them. So, that midfield three that started that game was the three that were starting games in the first 10 matches of the season. And it's absolutely fantastic. Now, Basuma was so good at original Luton game, the Luton away game where he got the Zaha red card for the second yellow for diving in the first half. But yeah, for whatever reason, the balance doesn't seem to be quite right now, whereas before it looked absolutely perfect. You know, before we were thinking Bentancur was an unbelievable player who wasn't going to get in the team, or one of these three players who started the season superbly were going to end up not in the team, and that was going to kind of be a difficult decision. But now, you know, Bentancur has come back from that long layoff or multiple layoffs, not looked at his best. Basuma's had this massive drop off. And I mean, we've talked about it a few times. His season has obviously been like so stop start since October, November. Yeah. Obviously, some of that has been of his own doing, but I think it's probably safe to say it hasn't helped him. And then Maddison, as you mentioned, I think he's done quite well. I thought he played well on Saturday. It wasn't like loads came off, but there were some really good passes. It's like his range of passing is so good. He's not quite at the level he was in the first 2-3 months of the season, but I think he's done pretty well.
The word is sharpness, isn't it? There's a moment in the Premier League games where if you're absolutely at your razor best, the things you try come off. And then there are moments when, if you're at 90%, the opposition is so good that they don't come off for you.
But also, the fact that other players around him are all slightly off it as well, in terms of fitness or sharpness or their fatigue or whatever else. Always just a lack of form, a loss of form. Like, that makes a difference to the player in question too, right? So you're kind of at the mercy of the performance level of all the players around you, and so are they. So it's a kind of like almost like a cumulative effect of kind of a slight dip in form that I think is probably kind of bouncing around the team. I mean, I don't really know what the resolution to that is. Like, how do you force players back into form when it feels like it's quite a lot of players in that team that are suffering from that now? You'd probably say that Iwudogi as well,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, but I think also, I know this is a sort of a relentless sore with me. The other teams are allowed to react to what you do. Coaches have seen what Spurs were doing in the first third of the season. They're not as suddenly blinking into the oncoming headlights by inverted fullbacks. Madison, they allowing the ball more easily in certain parts of the pitch. They like it when he drops back to the edge of his own box to pick the ball up, because yeah, you know, he's not going to beat you for pace from there. So you've got, you know, then you've got a chance to cut out the so-called passing lanes. I can see all that. So, but overall, and you know, afterwards, the manager made a point of talking about what he wants from the wingers. It was like he was talking directly to Kulusevski himself, perhaps not as directly as Guardiola was talking to Jack Grealish at the end of the game, performatively, I thought, yesterday. Look who's in charge here. But we shouldn't overlook the fact that Kulusevski has made, the stats in front of me tell me, 56 chances in the Premier League this season, more than any other Spurs player. But it did work, and Brendan Johnson continues to impress. You know, he sometimes can be frustrating because he sometimes looks a bit lightweight, but every game that goes by now, I start to think, oh good, he is going to make it as a top Premier League player now, isn't he?
He's just become incredibly effective over a really short period of time. Like, if you compare how effective he looked in the first 2 or 3 months of the season, or up to Christmas even, like, he had a few moments here and there, but generally wasn't necessarily having a huge impact on a game. And I mean, again, he had an injury and a bit of a stop-start time and was in and out of a team as well, so maybe there's mitigation there. But since the new year, no, given he hasn't even started every game, I think he's got, what, like 3 goals and 4 assists or 5 assists?
Plus the one he doesn't get for the equaliser, yep.
Right. And it just feels like every time he's on the pitch, particularly when he comes off the bench, he really just makes stuff happen. He's just incredibly effective. And even if, like, you know, there were games like the Brighton home game where, actually, to be honest, he played quite badly and didn't really do a lot or a lot of note until the last minute of injury time where he scored the winning goal. He's just become a bit, almost like a bit of a, like a really unlikely clutch player for Spurs.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that I just didn't really expect, particularly on the basis of the first half of the season. He just seems to kind of step up and create big moments in games where it just feels like it's slipping away. And when we're talking about Spurs coming back from behind so often, he has been the driving force of that, particularly in the last couple of months.
Yeah, and that's why his substitution, which is not a Wales podcast, just made no sense to me during the week. You know, he is becoming a big moment player. Nobody's a more big moment player than the man who scored the winner. In a world where people don't get 30 goals a season, unless they're playing in Germany, he's just incredible. And again, another fantastic stat here, and I'm not always, you know, he has scored the winning goal more than any other player in the Premier League. Yeah, he's the 5th highest goal scorer now. I forgot Bobby Smith there. He has scored the winning goal more times than any other player in the Premier League this season. Really interesting, though, another stat I've been provided with by our youthful producer. Spurs have now got 4 players who've made 7 or more assists. Not Kulusevski among them, interestingly. Son Heung-min himself with 8. Then James Maddison, Brendan Johnson and Pedro Porro with 7. No other team in the league has got 2 players who do that. Now, that's looking forward to the future. I think that's really good. I think if you've got loads of players who, because of the system, I presume, are making chances for others, that eventually, sooner or later, that's going to wear teams down, as it has been doing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the next thing you want is a decent number of players who've got those numbers of goals. Yeah. And at the moment, it only really feels like, what, Son, Richarlison, and I guess maybe Johnson's kind of on 4 or 5.
Yeah, he's not going to...
So it does feel like you need a couple more players who are going to kind of get into those kind of figures for goals, 6, 7, 8 goals.
Johnson and Maddison should be capable, so should Kulusevski, of getting towards double figures in a Premier League season. And
I guess Maddison had started reasonably well and then had the injury. Yeah, of course. So, you know, maybe that changes it. It probably does change it a lot. He missed half the season, basically.
Yeah, the winner when it came, you've already alluded to it, so I want to mention it. You know, again, classic Premier League goal. You're attacking one. The ball breaks to the opposition. It could have broken to Maddison. It could have broken to Dragosin. It didn't. It broke to Son. And from that moment, you no doubt Rob Edwards on the Luton bench was going, oh, God, no. Oh, God, no. The ball is then transferred through the two players you don't want it to be transferred through, Son and Werner, because the ball's now moving much faster than you can get your players back. Werner does well. The ball goes into the penalty area, as you described. Then I think Johnson needs to get credit for what he does, because every bone in his body must have been, you know, if it was me or you, and let's assume we're both fantastically fit, my knee wasn't playing up, your instinct is to turn and try and hit that towards the goal. For him to have the nous, with three players bearing down on him, to touch it back very slowly but with enough firmness to get it to Son. And I guess that's the difference between playing on Hackney Marshes and playing in the Maracana, isn't it? That you have enough confidence to do that, knowing that Son, even with the aid of a deflection, is going to smash it into the net. It was a brilliant touch by Johnson.
Yeah, it really was. And I think so many players, I mean, but in a way, that's probably testament to his confidence, actually, that he didn't like try and overcomplicate it. And you're right, I'm not saying it's like a simple ball because it was perfectly weighted, as you say. But, you know, maybe if that had happened to him in December, he would have like tried to take a touch and then maybe try and turn a defender and get a shot away or whatever, and probably not been able to do it because the defender was so tight. But he's done entirely the right thing by just cushioning that ball into Son. And you mentioned how kind of obvious it felt that he was going to score in those circumstances. I've seen a video on Instagram, like filmed from the crowd, where you can kind of see all the reaction of all the players and whatever else. And the kind of rise in noise when the ball falls to Son is so sharp. It's incredible. Like, everyone's just completely expecting that he's going to score in that situation. I mean, look, I know there'll be some kind of talk of an own goal and a deflected goal against Luton to win a game and that being lucky, but look, let's look at XG again, Danny. I know you like to look at the XG numbers every
time.
Well,
you can tell me that. They were nearly something up towards three goal Spurs, weren't they?
Yeah, I think it was 2.55 to 0.55, sure. Maybe. So, I mean, Spurs should have won on that basis 3-1.
Yeah. Don't lose by two goals, do they? So we know that. And in the end, look, to round this up, I thought this was a must-win game for Spurs. I said as much because the fixtures that are coming, despite Jack and I think Charlie's amazing idea that since teams never lose four games in a row in the Premier League.
That was me, by the way.
Thank
that was
you.
My
right.
idea.
Well, I must say that I clutched that straw. I clung to it, allowing myself to sleep at night. But logically, they've got some very, very, very difficult fixtures coming up. And while we're at it, Brentford's equaliser in the 127th minute, whatever it was, a huge goal for Spurs, because Manchester United are now getting to the stage where they will almost have to win most of their games even to get fifth. So I'm looking.
I think that's probably a bigger emotional gut punch for Manchester United than just losing the game 3-0, which is basically what they should have done.
Oh, unbelievable performance by Brentford. I mean, Thomas Frank's face when the Manchester United goal went in, I thought he was going to resign from the game completely, because, you know, not just that match. He's going to walk down the tunnel and say, right, I've had enough of this. I'm going to buy a yacht and go around the world with Mrs. Frank, because that is not fair. And it was great that they got the equaliser. We'll take a break. I was delighted in the end, because relieved. You know that bit where relief turns into delight, because, you know, I thought they had to win that game, Spurs, to keep themselves, you know, tucked in fourth, fifth, whatever it's going to be. But we have to look at the opposition. Villa got a very, very routine home win. But they've got, I think, the next game's against Manchester City.
Yeah, they've got City and Arsenal in the next three games, I think.
Yeah. So have we, sort of.
Well, yeah, a bit further down the line. But this is the thing, I think, like, they both had those three tough games. Yeah. So the Spurs, maybe, I would say, on over the course of the whole 10, have slightly tougher fixtures, but they do have one more, which is an advantage. And obviously Villa's still in Europe, which may counting against them too.
We wish them every success in Europe.
In Europe, we do.
Oh, yes. Absolutely, yeah.
A long, draining slog of a campaign.
Come on, the villains, you can do it. All right, let's take a break. And well done. Well done, Ange, for making the change that was A, necessary, and B, early. Well done to Brennan Johnson. Can't say that anybody else was outstanding on the day. Is that fair? I thought Werner played well.
I don't think anyone played badly, though. I just think, you know, I know it was a bit of a kind of emotional slug, probably, but I didn't think it was anything approaching a bad performance, really. Like, I think they did, for the most part, the right things in the game and created chances kind of fairly consistently through the game.
Yeah.
And to me, it always felt like it was coming. No great shame.
Well, I agree with you 95%. The other 5% is that there should be some naughty steps for the goal that we conceded. Sorry to be so old-fashioned as to worry about the goals that go in and into Spurs' net. I know. Grow up, Danny. We'll take a quick break. Lots to talk about in the next half, including that upcoming game against West Ham. Recruitment chat as well. Statue update. You're listening to me and James. And it's, as I say, it's not April Fool. It's just a weird anyone's prepared to work on a bank holiday, because we care about this podcast, we care about Spurs, and we care about you.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, welcome back to The View from the Lane. It's me, Danny Kelly, and James Moore. We've been looking back on the game against Luton, the other things we need to discuss now. James, we were surprised or inquiring about whether there were any people who support Spurs, who've got statues around the country. It's because of the Harry Kane statue, which, we're getting together, you and I are getting the dough together to buy for the podcast. Two developments on this, and thank you very much for all the people who've contributed to this since the last podcast. My own researches have taken us no further than the great Peter Cook. I would call him the godfather of British alternative comedy. The first person who realised it didn't have to be nudge, my mother-in-law to be funny. And Peter hasn't got a statue, and he wouldn't want one. Absolutely could not think of a person less inclined to want a statue. But there is, in the city of Westminster, a green plaque to him on a house there. It says, Peter Cook, 1937-1995, comedian and only twin, a reference to his relationship with Dudley Moore. Co-founded and ran the Establishment Club, ironically, here in 1961 to 1964. The absolute wellspring of British comedy post-war, along with Spike Milligan, of course. So there is at least a plaque to a famous Spurs fan. Somebody else told us about, is it the King of Norway?
So we had an email from one of our listeners, Marius, and he says, Hi guys, I love your podcast, perfect entertainment for the car ride to work. Regarding famous people who support Spurs with statues, Harald V, King of Norway, is a Spurs supporter, but he actually doesn't have a statue made of him yet. However, he does have several portraits painted of him.
That really counts. I think having an official portrait, not just, your child has done something with crayons and you've stuck it with a fridge magnet on the side of the freezer. I think having official portraits is very, very good indeed. So there we've got one green plaque, because it was a building, an establishment rather than, no pun intended, than a home. And we've got one official portrait, Harald V. We must try and get the King of Norway on the podcast.
Yeah, get him on.
Yeah, absolutely. How do I refer to you? Your Majesty, Harald, or Hal? Can I call you Hal? Can I call you Harry Baby? Et cetera. Oh, something else now, and this is not even in the putative running order. I want to put it to you, and we'll discuss it more in the next podcast. The stats now are plain. Opta put up the stats for people being fouled. Spurs are the most fouled team in the Premier League. They've conceded, they've gained more free kicks for fouls than any other team in the Premier League. Nearly 400 now in the course of the season. One penalty from 400 fouls on Spurs players. The problem with this, James, is I can't remember a penalty we've been denied.
Well, there's one against Sheffield United in September, wasn't there? One on Madison, kind of right on the edge of the penalty area in the first half of that game that definitely should have been given. Now, I'm pretty sure there was one relatively recently as well.
I think I remember the one you're talking about. Somebody went down to looking at the goal towards the left-hand side of the penalty area. I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought it was just one.
But I remember us having a conversation talking about that stat and the fact that it was the first one that we felt should have been given since that Madison one. But I can't think which game it would have been. It was Palace, wasn't it? Werner against Palace.
Yes, I mean, it was a contact, but it wasn't a penalty, was it, really?
Well, I think
okay.
it was.
Okay, well, the truth of the matter is, for some reason, Spurs' players don't go at the opposition in ways that allow them to be brought down, or they don't instigate the contact, depending on how you look at it. But since people who are smarter than me and have, very, very complicated machinery and stats that will always tell you these things tend to even themselves out. I'm looking forward to a welter of penalties in the games against Liverpool, Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea.
Can we just have all of them in the Arsenal game? There's like six penalties.
I want to spread them out through those fixtures.
Nah, just get them all in that game.
Well, you're really looking to belt Arsenal, are you? Okay.
I want a 1-0 win, six penalties.
Yeah, but I think somebody on the continent in Portugal saved three penalties this weekend, still ended up on the losing side. He may want to have words with his teammates, I suspect. But there's the statues and the penalties, which I'm going to keep an eye on update. What do we know about the changes in the recruitment staff at Spurs? Now, it seems to me, and it's true of all Premier League clubs, or largely true of all Premier League clubs, these people are always moving about. Directors of football, chief scouts, chief analyst. Spurs seem to have a lot of movement in this department, don't they? I mean, of course, what's happening? I know there's been a piece in The Athletic about it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my sense of it as well. In the last, 4 or 5 years, kind of going back to the end of Pochettino and Steve Hitchin, who was kind of the head of recruitment at that kind of in that era. Since Hitchin left, which I think was like, what would that have been, like 2021 maybe?
21, it feels like, yeah.
He was definitely in the documentary, so he must have, I think, was there the season after and left around the time Mourinho left. And then obviously Paratici came in, as you mentioned. But yeah, it seems since then there have been so many kind of scouts and recruitment chiefs and various other kind of people in that realm who have come and gone within the space of
for
about
20
six
years
months.
It was just David Pleat, wasn't it? And that
exactly, yeah. But I mean, we probably have to say that recruitment from a kind of outward perspective, just purely looking at how well signings have done for the first team in the last couple of seasons, it feels like it's been pretty good, really, for the most part. I've only really been one or two players where we talked about Brian Hill before. I don't think there are many other players where you'd say a definite
duds, no, quite
in kind of the transfer terms. But clearly the way these things work are more complicated than just that, I guess. And I suppose there's a degree of ego and people wanting to kind of be in charge or not. And it feels like when you have several big name people doing similar jobs, that's kind of the worst. This is my reading of it. It's kind of felt like there have been several people overlapping in very similar roles.
But sure. Again, I mean, I'm kind of minutiae
of these
and
jobs.
And Scott Munn may have eventually looked down the sort of spreadsheet and gone, hang on. What's he doing? What's she doing? What's he doing? The names involved are Ian Broomfield. He's been there a long, long time. Augusto Benito. I cannot pretend to have ever heard of Augusto Benito and Colin Jackson, who isn't the Olympic hurdling champion, all leaving as part of this transformation. The line that's been put on it, James, is that they're going to move, whether this is just an excuse or fashionable or the truth, is they're going to move from a less seeing the players with your eyes to a data-based model, which I think is the way Moneyball style, it's all going.
That's been a kind of oft-touted thing over the last year or so, I guess kind of since Munn came in. So I suppose with that in mind, maybe it shouldn't be a surprise. But, I don't know, call me old-fashioned. Don't you kind of want a bit of both? You need, like, people out in the field who can actually watch players up close and kind of see them and maybe meet them and people in their orbit and see... You know, this kind of idea, this concept of personality scouting, it's pretty important to know what players are like as people
totally.
As well. It's not just about like a number of forward passes and, you know, pressures under, what's that thing? Pressures under possession or whatever
it is. Look, we should mention, I think it would be, before we get on to West Ham, we should mention the fact that it was, I mean, you were there. How did the turning your back on the pitch after 65 minutes go? In protest, of course, about the way the concessions for older people...
Yeah, I had to confess, because it wasn't like a club-sanctioned thing. You know, sometimes with these, like, minutes applause or whatever, they'll put, like, a thing up on the screen to kind of explain what's happening.
So they didn't put up a sign saying protest against the owners now.
Yeah, but obviously, they didn't do that. So there were, like, people in... I sit quite close to the pitch, so there's not that many people in front of me. And people are all kind of turning around and watching the game on the screen, kind of in the corner behind. But as is quite often, I kind of assumed that they were looking at... like someone being thrown out of the ground or there was like some kind of argument or whatever. So I was kind of looking over my shoulder to see what was going on and couldn't work out what was going on. And then I realised it was the 65th minute and I was supposed to be facing the other way. So with apologies, I only probably faced away from the pitch for like the last 30 seconds of it.
You don't care about old people
enough. I think most people... Nah. I want concessions for people in their late 30s. That's what I'm after.
And so, you know, those who did protest, well done. I have to say... In the old stadium, it would have been very unsuccessful protest because, for instance, people of my size, I couldn't turn around the seat. I could barely sit in it when my knees were pressed into the back of the woman who used to sit in front of me.
Well, you'd have had to have stood
up. Yeah, of course. But even then, it was still a very, very tricky manoeuvre. And I could see myself tumbling, like yourself, I sat very near the pitch. I could see myself tumbling the two or three rows down to the side of the pitch during the protest. Not a sight you want to see, I'll be truthful with you. Which takes us on to... coming up very, very quickly, of course, and again, one in the razor's edges of how these things happen in the Premier League, one would have hoped that West Ham wouldn't be coming into the game. All right, I'll ask you. West Ham threw away the game at Newcastle with mad substitutions and, of course, a player coming back, Harvey Barnes, a player I've always really, really liked, coming back and scored an absolute banger. I think that might have been the correct word with the young people about 3 years ago to win the game. We'll be better off with West Ham getting beat in those circumstances at Newcastle. We'd be better if they'd hung on to their 3-1 win going into Tuesday.
I would say this is probably slightly better. I don't know. I just, you want a slight sense. I mean, look, we know what it'll be like at West Ham away, and our fans will be way up for it. And I don't want to use the phrase Cup final, but obviously it is one of their kind of standout fixtures.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure under the lights, it will be fairly raucous. But I think it's better to play them in these circumstances than...
Yeah, if they'd come off a great way.
I know they'll be, you know, looking for a response, as we say. I mean, the goals they conceded, fairly fast, weren't they? And I mean, Alvarez is still suspended for Tuesday night.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that increases the chances of Calvin Phillips playing. I mean, he didn't start the game without him in this instance.
Bless him. So I mean, you know, it's football, and so, you know, Bantz and all the rest of it. But the stuff that's happened to that kid, I mean, young man, whatever you want to call him, Phillips. And of course, you know, the picture of him giving it, flipping the bird to the West Ham fans afterwards. I mean,
we've all done that.
Yeah, sure, but I'm not 12 feet away from them and part of their first team squad. I wish I was on Tuesday. I'd love to play for West Ham on Tuesday.
What position would you play?
I play centre back, so I can influence the game.
You're going to push up and
I play very high line and limp back towards my own goal at the appropriate moments. Would you start Johnson?
If you're playing in the back four for West Ham, sure. I definitely would. Yeah. I think I probably would. I'd kind of probably start with something like the team that Spurs had in the kind of third quarter of that.
Right, game. Let's go through.
So Johnson in, Madison. Hang on, do you want me to go through the whole team?
Will Van de Ven play in your mind?
I think so. I mean, I'm kind of assuming he was deemed not quite 100%, and it made more sense to kind of keep him fresh for this game rather than
precisely
at home. And I guess possibly Nottingham Forest time. So
Porro.
So yeah, Porro, Romero, Van de Ven, Udogie. Yeah. I mean, that midfield three. I don't know whether you put Benson Kerr in there. Maybe you do.
This is the classic. You have to see him in training, don't you? It's like racehorses now. We can't really know. He may have given Bissouma a rocket and give him another go.
He can't have too many. I don't think he could have too many opportunities left without like good performances. Sure. Like it felt like he really did pick up, say, a month ago. But last couple of games have not been great. And when you've got that squad, you've got options. Even Højbjerg, I think, has played pretty well when he's come off the bench in the last couple of months, really. Helping the team see
I'm not
games.
A member of the Højbjerg is useless gang. He's just not.
No, nor am I. He's obviously not the best midfielder at the club. But he's clearly an incredibly useful player in this team in these circumstances, particularly when you're kind of trying to see out a tight game. And as you mentioned, those are quite often the circumstances Spurs are in at the end of the game.
I mean,
I'm not certain he'd start, but...
Okay, and Kulusevski on the bench?
Yeah, Kulusevski on the bench, Johnson in.
Yeah.
Son free in the middle, I think. And Werner on the left.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have to hope, don't we? I mean, we should be honest about this. West Ham are not... How can I get this right? I said at the start of the season to somebody who had captained West Ham, in fact, back in the day, this is the best squad of players West Ham have ever had. And he picked me up and said, what about in the early 1980s? Went on about the team with Devonshire and Brooking. I said, all right, within living memory, this is the best squad of players West Ham have ever had. Bowen's in fantastic form. Paquetar is capable of absolutely anything, including getting himself sent off. They've got some really good players.
Kudus as well.
Mohamed Kudus is a really good footballer. They haven't played.
Antonio always plays well against Spurs.
But he's 34 years of age, Antonio. He runs himself into the ground. It's very little turnaround time. But they haven't, as yet this season, played as the sum of the parts they've got available to themselves, at least very rarely. But as you say, the London Stadium and the East London Stadium will be absolutely bang up for this. It's going to be another nail biter. I can't see any other way that this is not, you know, I'd love to say the Spurs will stroll over there, score twice early, and then a mixture of grim determination and brilliant ball possession, see the game out so that by about 45, 50 minutes, we know it's going to be 3 points for Spurs. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good game for the neutral. I suspect there'll be goals. My worry is that if it's a kind of one of those end-to-end ones, that I think you, when we talked about Bowen, Kudus, Antonio, they're pretty clinical players. Yeah. Like, I mean, you saw the kind of goals they scored when they were playing well on Saturday. I do think they could score a couple of goals. So, I don't know, I feel like it could be quite a high-scoring game.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 3-2 either way. Of course, we always want Spurs to beat West Ham. We want Spurs to beat everyone. A special mention then for let's hope that we can make Kurt Zouma have a nightmare. I know we live in a redemptive society and one day I will forgive him, but he kicked his cat. And therefore, I always wish him some kind of calamitous performance against every team he plays against. And that is the kind of pettiness that I think marks both supporters of professional football clubs and particularly this podcast. It's been a joy, James. Thank you once again for taking time out to take part. Your more lauded, more famous colleagues just didn't seem to want to do it. Thank you all for listening as well. You know, whether you're listening on the bank holiday, happy Easter to you and all that good stuff. Thank you very much indeed. We'll be back in the middle of the week after the West Ham game. We'll see where that leaves us. I'll remind you, as I always do, that this show now has its own official home on Twitter. Just go to @VFTLpodcast and you can email us, as Marius did, to tell us about the King of Norway. Hi, Harald. That is at VFTL@theathletic.com. And the Spurs coverage in The Athletic is, and I say this with my hand on my heart, the best anywhere. Charlie, Jack and many others, all excellent writers, so make sure you sign up to The Athletic as well. All I can do at this stage is say again, last time, thanks for listening. Hopefully we'll get to get it done at West Ham. We'll see you after that. Come on, you Spurs.
The Athletic.